Oh, excuse me. You're welcome. Okay, Gopal, can you give us one of them? Serving devotees and reading, hearing. So hearing the Bhagavatam is very important, and also rendering service to devotees. That's also going to be mentioned in the verse and purport today. So before we start today's verse, did you do 11? Or is it the consent? Okay, so here's the question. Text number 11. Who was here for yesterday's class? Were most of you here for yesterday's class? Okay, can you tell me some of the points from yesterday? What were some of the major points in yesterday's class? Andrea? Is that your name? Okay. Krishna consciousness is a gradual process. It is. Okay, that's good. Okay. Another thing? That's all. Okay, well, we need these little encouragements on the way. Say that again. Okay. Something else? Some important points? Chant one mantra at a time. Thank you. Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. So you can focus on the holy name. So there's a little hint. In the purport, it was talking about the holy name and the 10 offenses to the holy name. So that was a clue. That helped wake everybody's mind up. Thank you. Something else? Did you have Gopal? That covers a whole range of people, doesn't it? You know, people who are free from material desires. Anyone here? Okay. People who are full of material desires. Okay, that covers some of us, right? And someone who's liberated. That covers a few of us too, right? So that's nice. So it chanting is good for all of those classes of people. It's not that you just have to be one type of person to benefit from the chanting. So today's going to continue a little bit on that subject, on that theme. And I want you to pay special attention while we're reading the purport, because I'm going to ask you questions, okay, about the purport. So tune in. Because sometimes we get in the habit. You might not have developed the habit yet, so I'm going to try to get you to develop a good habit. Sometimes you get in the habit to come to a Bhagavatam class and you just go in like the sleep mode, not necessarily physically sleep, but the brain just thinks it has to be fed. But we want the brain to be active and inquiring and understand what's going on. So, okay, we'll do the Sanskrit and then we'll do... Now we can start the class because Mr. Arjuna is here. Hari Bol. Kim pramatasya bahubi. Kim pramatasya bahubi. Parokshar har hayanar iha. Parokshar hayanar iha. Varam muhurtam viditam. Varam muhurtam vititam. Gatate shreyase yata. Gatate shreyase yataha. Kim pramatasya bahubi. Parokshar hayanar iha. Varam muhurtam viditam. Gatate shreyase yata. Please chant. Kim pramatasya bahubi. Parokshar hayanariha. Varam muhurtam viditam. Gatate shreyase yata. Kim pramatasya bahubi. Parokshar hayanariha. Varam muhurtam viditam. Gatate shreyata. Kim pramatasya bahubi. Padokshar haryanar iha. Param muhurtam viditam. Katate shreyase yata. And one more, please. Kim pramatasya bahubi. Parokshar haryanar iha. Param muhurtam viditam. Katate shreyase yata. Kim. What is pramatasya of the bewildered? Bahubi, by many. Parokshai, inexperience. Hayanai, years. Iha, in this world. Varam, better. Muhurtam, a moment. Vititam, conscious. Gatate, one can try for. Shreyase, in the matter of the supreme interest. Yataha, by that. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. What is the value of a prolonged life which is wasted, inexperienced by years in this world? Better a moment of full consciousness, because that gives one a start in searching after his supreme interest. Let's repeat that. Or let's say it together. Let's say it together. What is the value of a prolonged life which is wasted, inexperienced by years in this world? Better a moment of full consciousness, because that gives one a start in searching after the supreme interest. Okay, so now I want someone to tell me what that means in their own words. Thanks for volunteering, Arjuna. Good. Yeah, very good. Anyone else? What's your new name? Sorry. Vaishnavdas, Hare Krishna. Prabhu? Yeah. What's the use of that? Here we're going to hear about it in the purport, okay? Okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami instructed Maharaj Parikit about the importance of chanting the holy name of the Lord by every progressive gentleman. In order to encourage the king, who had only 7 remaining days of life, Srila Sukadeva Goswami asserted that there is no use in living hundreds of years without any knowledge of the problems of life. Better to live for a moment with full consciousness of the supreme interest to be fulfilled. The supreme interest, so here Prabhupada now is going to explain what's the supreme interest, and he's also going to go back and explain what are the problems in life that you should become aware of. So the supreme interest of life is eternal, with full knowledge and bliss. Who knows the Sanskrit for those three words? Sat-chit-ananda, eternal, full knowledge and bliss. Those who are bewildered by the external features of the material world are engaged in the animal propensities of gator life. I mean, of eat, drink, and be merry type of life. And they are simply wasting their lives by the unseen passing of valuable years. Do you want to continue reading, Baladev? Okay, all right. I can relate to that. And then we can pass. You can read a little few and pass it around, okay?
We should know in perfect consciousness that... Oh, sorry.
That's two things. That's no, hard. We should know in perfect consciousness.
We should know in... We should know in perfect consciousness that human life is bestowed upon the conditioned soul to achieve spiritual success. And the easiest possible procedure to attain this end is to chant the holy name of the Lord. In the previous verse, we have discussed this point to a certain extent, and we may further be enlightened on the different types of offenses committed unto the feet of the holy name. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu has quoted many passages from authentic scriptures and has ably supported the statements in the matter of offenses at the feet of the holy name.
Okay, hold on a second. Is it going into the kitchen? Is the mic on?
Yeah.
Can you hear the purport in the kitchen?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so go on. Thanks. It's okay.
From Vishnu, Vishnu Yamala, Tantra Srila Jiva Goswami has proved.
Of all sins, simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Quoting from the Markandeya Purana, Srila Jiva Goswami says, Sri Goswamiji says, that one should neither blaspheme the devotees of the Lord, nor indulge in hearing others who are engaged in belittling the devotee of the Lord. Belittling a devotee of the Lord. So before we get to read the whole purport, there's been some very important points that Prabhupada has already made there. So it was a little difficult to focus in on that. So let's concentrate on what Prabhupada's already said. Has anything struck you about what we've already read in the purport? Gopal? The very last thing, blaspheming the devotees. Okay. Dwi Jamani, thank you.
Don't judge other devotees.
Don't judge other devotees. Okay. Belittling, it means just like the word little, belittle. You're thinking that someone else is smaller, or, you know, you're criticizing someone else. Criticizing someone else. In other words, and that's an interesting thing, just the word belittling. You be little so I can be big. You know, it's the quality. Why are we criticizing? We're criticizing to put everyone else down so that we can show that we are actually more advanced. Little further up even before the offenses, what did Prabhupada say? What was the value of human life? Prabhu?
To make spiritual, to perfect oneself spiritually. Also, he says that by chanting the holy name, Shri Jiva Goswami says that by chanting the holy name of the Lord, that the reactions to all sinful activities can be eradicated.
Right, right. So the first point, Prabhupada said, we should know in perfect consciousness that human life is bestowed upon us, upon the conditioned soul, to achieve spiritual success. So it's a great boon to actually come and be in the human form of life, and we take it so casually. We think that it's, you know, just something. But actually, the Vedas explain that in order to be in the human form of life, one has to have already passed through 8,400,000 different varieties and species of life. So even you could say, and so you can just think of that. Don't read it and not let it sink in. Think of what that means in the terms of time. 8,400,000 species of life. Many of them are quite quick, and some of them are quite long in each species. You know, some of the little bugs that are born, they're born and they die in the nighttime. And some live, you know, a few days, some a few weeks, different species of life a few years. Then there's trees that live so long. Then so many species, so much time just to get. That's why Prabhupada, he always, in the Vedas, always stress, this human form of life is a gift. Don't waste it. That's the basic point. Don't waste it. You've got this valuable human life. Don't waste it in searching after what? What did Prabhupada say that most people search after in their sense gratification? Eat, drink, and be merry. How to be comfortable in this life. And the unfortunate thing about a life of eat, drink, and be merry, there's a couple of unfortunate things about that. One is that it's not even possible. It's not even possible to gratify the senses. Have you noticed that yet? You know, that's an important realization. That's so you're very realized. Don't be, even though this process of Krishna consciousness is gradual, it's true, you've already made some very important realizations. You've tried for so many years to be happy in so many ways. Some nice ways, and some not so nice ways. And all of them have never led to a very prolonged amount of happiness. And what else has occurred while we've been endeavoring in so many ways for gratifying our senses? What else do we get besides the happiness or the distress? And what's your name, Prabhu? Olivia? Okay. Suffering. Exactly. Not only do we get suffering right then, immediately, you know, might come along, but we get entangled, we get future suffering. We get entangled in bad karma. We get bad karma, a lot of it. And what does that mean? Future means suffering now and again. And depending on how entangled we are, how covered we are, how much bad karma we get, it's a great possibility that you don't even come back in a human life. You come back again lower and again crawl your way up, scratch your way up to the human form of life, where you've got this opportunity to, you know, inquire. Where did I come from? What's the goal of life? These are very basic questions for human life. You don't need the PhD or this or that. You don't need an IQ level of a certain number to inquire like that. You want to ask a question already, Mr. Sutri Sagar? Okay, go ahead. Or a comment, maybe.
I was wondering, the demigods, they are so much more intelligent than humans, so why cannot they, why is it only the human birth, why not in the demigod bodies they can get liberated or like that?
They can. They have the opportunity, but in the heavenly planets, when one gets that so much unlimited sense gratification, one gets bewildered and distracted by it. They can, and they have that opportunity. The opportunity is there in every species of life, but will you take advantage of it? Prabhupada says that wealth, accumulation of wealth, is a real distraction for pursuing spiritual life. So that could be it. So anyway, okay, hold on. So we've got, so in order to inquire as to what the goal of life, why am I here, what's the purpose of life, how can I get free from suffering, why can't I be happy, even though that's simple thing that I'm trying to do, be nice about it, you know, I'm not, you know, killing everybody, I just want to be happy, what's so difficult? This is human life. This is a realization. So you've made these basic questions in your life. So pursue it. Don't be distracted. So now Prabhupada's going to be quoting from Jiva Goswami. Okay, so now in the rest of the purport, Prabhupada's going to give us some things to avoid so that we can stay on the path. What we should avoid in our spiritual quest in order that we stay fixed on the path. So you want to continue reading, or can we do that? Okay. Yeah, hold the microphone. Where are you? Yeah, okay. Start from quoting. Is that all right?
A devotee should try to restrict the vilifer by cutting out his tongue and being...
No, go start up here again. Go a couple sentences up. Quoting from the Markandeya
Purana. Quoting from the Markandeya Purana, Sri Goswami Ji says that one should neither blaspheme the devotees of the Lord nor indulge in hearing others who are engaged in belittling a devotee of the Lord. A devotee should try to restrict a vilifer by cutting out his tongue, and being unable to do so, one should commit suicide rather than hear the blaspheming of the devotees of the Lord.
Okay, so that's a pretty heavy statement. And I could hear what your impression was of that statement, but let's hear it aside from... So what were some of your impressions from that statement? Did you hear that? That if one hears blasphemy, one should cut out the vilifier, the person who's speaking, their tongue. And if you're not able to do that, then you should commit suicide. Pretty radical. Prabhus? Gopal, can you shed some light on that drastic statement?
When I always hear that statement, I think that's one of the reasons you need a living spiritual master instead of just book knowledge, because I don't really think Prabhupada wanted us to do that.
That's a very good understanding. Can you think of an example in scriptures where this has been put into practice? Sripanaka?
She was talking... But I guess it was a different case.
I think so.
Supranaka.
That was a different case. Thank you. I'm glad you had that realization before you spoke. Good. Okay. An example.
She was vilifying Sita. So
That's true. Okay.
Ravan.
Okay. Okay. An example from scripture. Do we do money?
I think Mother Shishu, Lord cut the head of Shishupal, who blasphemed the Lord. He's counting 100.
That's a tad different also. You know why Krishna cut off Shishupal's head? Because he didn't want the Pandavas to cut off Shishupal's head and wreck the Jagya that was going, the Rajasuya Jagya, because then if they would have had bloodshed in the Rajasuya Jagya, then that would have nullified the effects of the Jagya from Maharaj Yudhisthira, so the Lord did it.
The second one is?
When she heard, okay. All right, good one. Sati committed suicide when she heard her father, Daksha, blaspheme Lord Shiva. That's a good one, thanks. Prabhu?
The famous story where Haridas Thakur and Lord Nityananda, they approached Jagai and Madai to try to preach to them to give up their sinful ways and take up chanting the holy name. And they immediately began to blaspheme them and actually struck them in the head with a pot. Lord Chaitanya, when he heard this, he immediately went to the scene and he was going to cut their heads off right on the spot.
He was going to. But he didn't. Thanks for bringing that up. That's a really good example. Because he was going to cut the, Lord Chaitanya was going to cut the head of Jagai and Madai off for blaspheming and injuring Lord Nityananda. But Lord Nityananda fell at Lord Chaitanya's feet and said, "My Lord, please don't do that. Your incarnation of Lord Chaitanya is to bestow mercy, so please show them mercy. It's more potent than cutting off their heads." So that was more or less the point that I was trying to get. There's not very many, although these instructions from scriptures are not to be taken lightly, still, as Gopal said very sagaciously, that we need to understand how to apply these things. And one impression that we should get from hearing these statements is that it's not something that we should indulge in. It's very serious to hear blasphemy and to partake in it and to indulge in it and to wallow in it and to whatever. It's very detrimental to our own spiritual life. Very seriously, it can impede our progress and stop our progress in spiritual life. So, the point is that there aren't very many examples of people doing this, because why? Because you'd have to practically cut off the heads of everyone, you know, and where would you be if you did that? You'd be out of commission. Yamaraj Prabhu?
Yes.
Can you grab the mic? Yeah.
I want to ask you a question. Now, blaspheming in the mind, does that apply also?
Blaspheming in the mind is always doing its thing, which is, you know, criticizing everybody and this and that. So, it's very difficult, have you noticed, to control the mind? If you don't control the mind, then it's very hard to control the tongue. But if there's the process thinking, feeling, and willing. So the thinking, if you can check the offenses that one thinks of in the mind and stop them there, then one is in a better position. If it goes a little further and comes out your mouth, you're much more implicated. And it's explained that in Kali Yuga, there's a couple of hidden benefits of Kali Yuga. One is that in Kali Yuga, one is not responsible for offenses committed in the mind. One doesn't get the karmic reaction. Previously, in other ages, when people were more spiritually advanced, even offenses or sinful activities that they committed in their mind, they would get karmic reaction for. But in this age, that's not the truth. Yes, dear? Sure. Junior Haridas, yes, he did commit suicide after a whole year that Lord Chaitanya never... What about him? That's When you read the purports in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada explains that he was very severe in that case to set a really strong example of what it's for sannyas. That sannyas shouldn't indulge in any relationship with women. Now, when you read in other literature, which I can't remember which one it is, I don't think it's Chaitanya Bhagavat, but other stories, there was actually a little bit more to that than it's explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But that was a special case for the devotees. And you see, Prabhupada says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that the devotees, after that incident, they gave up all thoughts of that, of mixing with women, even in their dreams. So it had an effect like that. So that was an example case. Jai. So we were saying on Yamaraj's point, what about things in the mind? So previously in other ages when people were more spiritually advanced, then they did get karmic reaction even for thoughts that they made in their mind. Yes, Prabhu? What's your name? Bhakta Daniel. Yes? You want to grab the mic just so she can hear in the kitchen? Thanks, Daniel. Sorry.
It's just remembering this from the Bhagavatam, I think, somewhere. Where I think it's the wife of a sage goes to the river and goes to some water or something, and she sees a king with a whole lot of other girls sporting, as it's said, in the river. And she thinks about it, and she comes back, and he knows straight away.
Yeah.
And then doesn't he ask things his sons to kill him, to kill her?
Kill her, the mother.
And they say no, and then he asks the younger son to kill her and the sons, and so he says, okay, and kills them straight away.
Yeah,
but then he brings him back.
Yeah, there, you're right. And then the end. So that's the story of Janmadagni, and his wife was begins with an R. His wife's name. Remember Janmadagni's wife's name? Okay, Janmadagni, and see, but okay. Yeah, I don't have an explanation for that other than those are. So the wife sees a Gandharva and becomes attracted to him. The husband sees that the wife is unfaithful, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the son, Parashuram, is the incarnation of, is a empowered incarnation of the Lord. So he follows the order of the father because he knows his father's potency. He understands the potency that the father has. And then, so then when he kills his mother and all his brothers, His father becomes very pleased with him and says, okay, would you like a benediction? And he says, yes, I would like the benediction that my mother and all my brothers come to life again and they don't remember that I killed them. Because he didn't want that tension in the family, understandably, right? So his father has the potency to do that. So then we can also understand that's incredible spiritual potency. You know, that's incredible. That's like not an easy feat to do that, you know. So someone who can do that. That's another point is that someone who, these great, sometimes we judge, like if you take that story and you just take some parts of it, and then you think, wow, that's really heavy. I don't think I want to have much to do with people like that. But when you actually see how much potency that they have and how they can do that, then you can get a better, more wholesome picture of the whole thing. You know? So, the point the point, even with Sati committing suicide when her father an offense to Lord Shiva. They have such spiritual potency that those personalities, we shouldn't judge them according to our mundane vision. That's another point. You know, we judge, oh, that's not right, or this or that. But they're so potent, we shouldn't criticize them. Or at least understand that they're way more advanced than we are. You know. So shall we continue on reading in the purport a little bit? The conclusion is, yeah. You want to read, Daniel? Okay, you can read. What's your name, Prabhu?
Clayton.
Clayton. Okay, thank you, Clayton. Can you start where? Okay, yeah. As far as distinguishing, start there.
Okay. I don't think we read the sentence before that.
Please do that one, too.
The conclusion is that one should neither hear nor allow vilification of a devotee of the Lord. As far as distinguishing the Lord's holy name from the names of the demigods, the revealed scriptures disclose in Bhagavad, Canto 10, Chapter 41, that all extraordinarily powerful beings are but parts and parcels of the supreme energetic Lord Krishna.
Okay, hold on a second. So the first thing that Srila Prabhupada was explaining in the purport correlates to the first offense against the holy name, blaspheming the devotees. Second offense against chanting the holy name. He went through these briefly in the previous purport. Second offense is, now he's talking about the second offense. Yes. So continue, Clayton, please.
Except for the Lord himself, everyone is subordinate. No one is independent of the Lord. Since no one is more powerful than or equal to the energy of the Supreme Lord, no one's name can be as powerful as that of the Lord. By chanting the Lord's holy name, one can derive all the stipulated energy synchronized from all sources. Therefore, one should not equalize the supreme holy name of the Lord with any other name. Brahma, Shiva, or any other powerful god can never be equal to the supreme Lord Vishnu. The powerful holy name of the Lord can certainly deliver one from sinful effects, but one who desires to utilize this transcendental potency of the holy name of the Lord in one's sinister activities is the most degraded person in the world. Such persons are never excused by the Lord or by any agent of the Lord. One should, therefore, utilize one's life in glorifying the Lord by all means without any offense. Such activity of life, even for a moment, is never to be compared to a prolonged life of ignorance, like the lives of the tree and other living entities who may live for thousands of years without prosecuting spiritual advancement.
Thank you. So this second point that's been made in the purport, Can we have a little discussion on that, and kind of, can someone summarize the second point or the point that Clayton just read there? Clayton, you can summarize it with the microphone, please.
It's foolish to think that other names like Shiva or Brahma, that they have the same power of Lord Vishnu. And as we talked about just after reading the verse, that not even one moment of thinking about spiritual life is living a life without even a moment of thinking of spiritual life is a wasted life.
Yeah.
Or it's just a vegetable life like that of a tree.
Yeah. What's the point? Okay, so how can we understand what he's saying there about the demigods? What about the names of the demigods? What was he saying there about the names of the demigods? Again, Clayton just summarized it, but let's go a little deeper. Why is it that, Lord Shiva, he can destroy the whole universe. He's extremely powerful. Lord Brahma, he created the universe. He's extremely powerful. So why is it that their names are, it's not recommended to chant those names? Daniel.
Krishna or Vishnu gave them the power, so therefore he's more powerful.
Yeah, you got the essence right there. They're getting their power from the Supreme Lord, but many people. So how is it that people get bewildered and think that Shiva's God or Vishnu or Brahma's God or whomever else's God? Daniel, you can go there too.
Doesn't Krishna say in the Gita that whatever faith you have, he'll make that faith strong, and if you want to be bewildered or in illusion, he'll give that to you.
Yeah, whatever, whomever you want to worship, he'll make your faith in that deity stronger and stronger. Isn't that cheating? Oh, sorry. Gopal, you want to help us there? Isn't he like
This is more of a question, actually. This, the several things in this purport apply to something that just happened between me and Baladev. I was blaspheming a certain devotee because I was saying he said that Lord Shiva could award liberation. And I said, no, only Lord Vishnu could award liberation. So can you answer that question? Can Lord Shiva award liberation? Yeah, that was put forward by an advanced Vaishnava on the Shiva.
Well, you know, so, not to just jump in there and, you know, but you have to understand. I mean, I don't know how it was presented and this and that.
Part of my story.
Okay, we're doing a little mediation here. Go ahead.
All right, so we have four bona fide
line, sampradayas. One is the four Kumaras, one is Lakshmi Devi, Lord Shiva, and Brahma. So if we follow Lord Shiva's line, we attain liberation. Am I right?
Yeah. Ask Kalakanta. Yeah, if you follow, these are bona fide sampradayas, right. But the thing is that in that sampradaya, they're not presenting Shiva as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Rudra Sampradaya is not presenting anything different. So in that sense, you're correct. But in the other sense, Gopal's correct.
So at the end,
because those who are following Lord Shiva in that, because what does it say in the Bhagavatam that Lord Shiva is the greatest of Vaishnavas? So he's presenting himself in that way. So one who follows in that way, he's getting his power and he can, yes, just like, but we're in the Brahma Sampradaya. We're not worshipping Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma is not awarding us liberation. We're worshipping Krishna. We're just in that Sampradaya, that teaching line.
So the liberation that comes from Lord Shiva is, he is a media to attain like a spiritual master.
Yes, that's it. I was just thinking of Hiranyakashipu asking for immortality, and Lord Brahma said, I can't give you that. And yet we're in the Brahma Sampradaya.
Yeah, because he's the via medium in that sense of the knowledge of Krishna, and therefore... And that's the spiritual master is the transparent via medium. He's transparent. He's not. It's not by his potency, although in one sense it is, but it's not by his potency. He's delivering the potency of the Lord down through the line. So that's the point there. That was a good question. That was good. Clayton?
Did you say the four sampradayas?
The four sampradayas are... One comes from Lord Brahma. We're in the Brahma Sampradaya. One is from Brahma. One is from Lord Shiva. That's also, it's called the Rudra Sampradaya. One comes from Lakshmi. It's called the Shri Sampradaya. And one comes from the four Kumaras. Kumara or Nimbarka. Oh yeah. Kumara Sampradaya, sometimes known as Nimbarka Sampradaya. So they're bona fide. In fact, when you take your trip to India and you go to Mayapur temple and then you go down the street to the Yoga Pit where Lord Chaitanya was born and you see the Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's temple there. He has the four deities from the four sampradayas in his temple room. You know, it's these cute little dioramas of the presiding deities of those sampradayas, and it's quite nice. They're not... Anyway, whatever.
Can you share more information on Rudra Sampradaya? Like, where are they found in India? A little bit, like...
I don't know much about it. I can't.
And so you're sure that they worship Krishna and not, like... Their followers do not worship Shiva as Supreme...
If they're following in the Rudra Sampradaya, then they're not worshipping Shiva as God, as the Supreme Lord. There are many other followers of Shiva in different places, but they're not necessarily in the Rudra Sampradaya. Not in that that authorized, where you can trace the spiritual master spoke to this one, their line of disciplic succession. So there are also other followers of Lakshmi, but they're not necessarily in that Lakshmi, in that Sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya. Sri Sampradaya is mostly located in South India. The Ramanujas are in the Sri Sampradaya, but I don't know much about Rudra Sampradaya or its presence. But
just from Rudra Sampradaya, I remember in one of the purport, Prabhupada said Bilwa Mangal Thakur
is
from Rudra Sampradaya. And I also heard Sridhar Swami, who commented Bhagavatam. He's from Rudra Sampradaya.
Oh, okay, thanks. Okay, Yamaraj.
They were having. If you were worshiping Lord Shiva, would the end result be the same as if you're in the Brahma Sampradaya and you're worshiping Krishna?
If you're in the Shiva, if you're in the Rudra Sampradaya, if you're in that Sampradaya, you'll get.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. If you're worshiping Lord Shiva, And so the end result is not the same as
right.
being in the Brahma
Sangha. If you're worshiping Lord Shiva as the Supreme Lord or this or that, then you're not getting the same result as you would get in the Sampradaya, in the disciplic succession. That's why the disciplic succession, to understand what this is called also another word for the disciplic succession, the Sanskrit word is parampara. This parampara concept and understanding, it's important to get a grasp on that, to understand why it's so valuable, why it's essential that you get your information from the disciplic succession. So let's have a discussion on that for a minute. Gopalji, can you enlighten us? Why is it so essential?
Well, first of all, those four sampradayas, those are all Vaishnava sampradayas, which means the worshippers of Lord Vishnu. Prabhupada says they're all Vaishnava sampradayas.
Yes.
So if, even if it's in the Rudra sampradaya, they're worshipping Lord Vishnu because it's a Vaishnava sampradaya. And what was your question?
My question is, why is it so important to get? I mean, there's so many, you know, there's 10 zillion books and followers of everybody out there, and there's 10 million branches, just like even if you take Christianity, because we're familiar with Christianity.
Right.
There's so many different versions of Christianity.
Well,
why is it important that we stick to the Sampradaya?
Because it was directly spoken by Krishna, originally.
Okay. Very good.
If there is a God, then why can't he be a person? And if he can be a person, then why can't he come here and tell us this is the absolute truth? Besides that, we would never know. We could speculate forever. So the Sampradaya is important because it comes from an authority that, Krishna himself.
Okay. Could someone else want to add to that? Clarify that or add another? Can you think of an example that's given in the scriptures? Of how we can picture this understanding. Sometimes there's some really nice analogies given so that we can picture why the Sampradaya is important. I forget your name. What's your name? Yeah.
Rasaraj.
Yeah, Rasaraj. Thanks, Rasaraj. Welcome home again.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Rasaraj, can you give us an analogy about this parampara?
I think so. I was reading yesterday... I don't know if it's actually in the scriptures, but Prabhupada talks about this idea of like a ripe mango at the top of a tree.
You got it. Right.
And,
so please explain that.
Well, if somebody...
It is in the scriptures, but go ahead.
If somebody goes to, pick a mango at the top of the tree and they just drop it to the ground themselves, then the mango just kind of splatters on the ground and it's no good anymore. But if it's actually handed down, from like a chain of people... from the top, to the bottom, and it remains kind of intact, then that's compared to, like, this transcendental knowledge that's being passed down through
generations. Okay, so what's the transcendental knowledge there?
The mango.
So the transcendental knowledge is handed down. The spiritual master, he heard from his spiritual. He understands what he heard, and he teaches and preaches his disciples. His disciples hear... from the spiritual master, they assimilate it, they become realizing it, and then they preach. And that way, how does that help keep the knowledge intact? What does that prevent? Partial understanding, deviation, so many things. So we can see that, so the spiritual master, also the position of the spiritual master or the self-realized person, they have different, they have the opportunity to present according to time and circumstances also, too. So that's also added in there, which makes it a little, more... They present the knowledge according to time and circumstance. Just like, for example, Srila Prabhupada, how he presented Krishna consciousness in the West. It is a little slightly different, the presentation, But the essence isn't any different. And the presentation differences, particularly in one of the major ones, is in regards to women. Because previously in India, in the ashrams in India, there was no women, there were never women allowed because just of the whole social setup of India. When he came here to the West, he, he allowed women to come and gave them full facility and, because that's our culture. Our culture is totally different. So he presented the essence, but he had to make that adjustment, or else where would he be? You know, who would have accepted it? How would, you know, we brought up so different, you know, and yet the essence isn't changed. So that conception of the parampara is very important to understand, and to understand it from many different angles, because especially now, so when I joined the movement, all we had was Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's books. Now there's much more available out there on the internet in so many places, so many more books from different authors, from different lines, and they're presenting what appears to be, you know, Vedic knowledge, and it is to a certain extent Vedic knowledge, but it comes with a different tinge. It comes with a different perspective. So we need to really understand that and stick to our sampradaya. Srila Prabhupada was very adamant on that, to stick to our sampradaya. Not blindly either. That's another thing. We're not trying to teach everyone to just be blindly and not inquire, but to be faithful to the teachings of the previous acharyas, to understand that we will get all information and all perfection in that way. So there was one thing I was hearing recently. Especially in the beginning, especially in one's beginning pursuance of Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada gave us four books, you know, to really get the basic knowledge in Krishna consciousness. Bhagavad Gita. Become familiar with Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. Become familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam. Then also Nectar of Devotion and Chaitanya Charitamrita can come later, but even Nectar of Instruction, Sri Upanishad, that's five. Huh? You know, these basic books, get a good, strong basis in these books, and then later, you know, there's so many books out there that might attract you. You can do those later. Even Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada said that was, you know, advanced course. Although it's there. So, I always get amazed on where classes go, because it wasn't really my intention to go into the parampara. But anyway, whatever. We go with the flow, as they say. So, any other points here? Any questions? Arjuna?
We should get a microphone just for him.
Maybe.
I can have a small microphone attached to my microphone.
You can. We can just have you wired. Okay. Go on.
Just want to ask, where are these sampradayas mentioned in the scriptures? And so, where is Rudra Sampradaya? Where are these sampradayas mentioned in the scriptures? What Purana?
Padma Purana?
All of them are mentioned.
That wouldn't have been the answer that I would have said, but it's okay. They're in the Bhagavad Gita.
No. Rudra Sampradaya, all these four Sampradayas I'm asking, where they're specifically mentioned. I know that Bhagavad Gita mentions Sampradayas, but four Sampradayas, where does it mention?
Padma Purana.
Can you give me the chapter?
But they are mentioned in the Bhagavatam in different places when Prabhupada explains. Don't know. Basically, to answer the question honestly. Vaishnava Das?
This is a sort of different question. While reading the purport, Prabhupada says trees live for a long life. And one pastime came to my mind that Lord Chaitanya made those tall trees disappear, which were pierced by Lord Ram.
Lord Ram.
They live for so long, which usually these trees don't live. So what's the story behind that? Do you know?
What's the story behind when Lord Chaitanya was touring South India, at one point he saw these seven tall trees. Like, tall is like a palm tree, a type of a palm tree. Huge, huge, huge palm trees that had been there since the time of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes. And at one point in Lord Ramachandra's, was it when when Lord Ramachandra was proving to Bali that he was, because, anyway, that's a long story. Okay, anyway. In Lord Ramachandra's pastime, one time Lord Ramachandra pierced the seven trees with one arrow. It went through all seven trees, and then the arrow, that same arrow, returned to Lord Ramachandra's quiver. He was kind of giving an exhibition of his abilities. And they didn't die at that point either, interestingly enough, the trees. And so then when Lord Chaitanya was visiting South India, he hugged those trees because they had been part of Lord Ramachandra's past. And then they became liberated. So Vaishnavas asked, what's the meaning of that pastime? Is that what you're asking? What's the story? Well, I could speculate something, and I'll just tell you one of the, Krishna just sometimes wants to exhibit some of his potencies to attract the living entities to see that he's not an ordinary living being. So Lord Ram, he did that out of his pleasure, and Lord Chaitanya did it out of his pleasure. So that's one thing. Krishna, I don't know if it has a deep philosophical meaning. Does it, O great sage? Yeah, there's another explanation that takes a little longer, and I'm not really good at long explanations, but the story of Jai and Vijay. So Jai and Vijay, they were cursed by the Kumaras. They took three births as demons. So they were killed first time by Lord Varaha. And then they were killed second time by Lord Ram. And then the third time by Krishna. Okay? So for example, on the Battle of Kurukshetra, when Krishna's driving Arjuna's chariot, all the people that were killed on the Battle of Kurukshetra, because they were killed in Krishna's presence, they all attained liberation. All the soldiers on Duryodhana's side, all the soldiers on Arjuna's side. And in fact, it is stated that the soldiers on Duryodhana's side were actually even more fortunate because they could see Krishna face to face, where all the other guys, they just saw him in the back. But anyway, it doesn't matter, front or back, they were all liberated because that's this unique position of Krishna as the supreme source of all avatars. So a person could ask, why wasn't Hiranyaksha liberated when he was killed by Lord Varaha? Liberated. Why wasn't he liberated when he was killed by Lord Ramachandra? Why did they have to come again? Aside from the curse thing. Andrea, did you have an answer for that? Yeah. That was it. She got the essence. Because Krishna is the only one who can award that transcendental liberation. Even Lord Ram, he can award liberation to his abode, Ayodhya. It's a little technical. But Krishna can award one liberation to Goloka Vrindavan, only him. How's that for a prolonged, complicated explanation? Shruti Sargar?
I was wondering, when we talk to new people regarding the parampara, like we say, oh, because, at one point it comes out, it's given to us in the parampara, this is in the Gita, Acharyas are saying this. And then, it is a sound argument, but sometimes, especially those who are really skeptical, they take it as blind faith.
They see it as blind faith.
He's just listening to someone.
Yeah.
And then they say, how do you know that it didn't get corrupted in the process? How do we answer these questions?
How do we know that it didn't get corrupted in the process?
And why accept this particular sampradaya and something like that?
And why accept this particular sampradaya? Good question. Well, also, oftentimes if you go too fast to somebody, then they're going to have all of those questions. But if you develop their faith gradually, then they can see the answer to those questions. So that's one thing to keep in mind. Another thing to keep in mind is sometimes philosophical points, people, although we think we're philosophically inclined, people don't have a great capacity to understand philosophy in general right away. So that's why in the Vedic scriptures there's so many analogies given. So when one gives the analogy, a simple analogy, like the example of the ripened fruit and the mango, that's then you can get the concept. So if they can get the concept, then that's progress. That's progress. So you can leave it at the concept. As far as the details will come later as one's faith develops. So I'm glad that we talked about this parampara a bit. But I think the essence of this purport was the fact that this human form of life is very rare. And a little bit of inquiry into the nature of the absolute truth, that's the most valuable. And a life that doesn't have that opportunity, doesn't afford one that opportunity, that's a wasted life. That, to me, is a much more, at this point, that's a very powerful concept to understand. Because that can be the driving force behind all the decisions that you make in life. Especially in this university environment, decisions that we make in life are very, they have a long-term effect on our life. So if you can grasp that point, that human life is very rare, let me utilize it in the most, in the best way that I can, then that being your guiding decision in life, that's very important. And on that note, we will say our question to Jagannath Puri. Yes, Prabhu.
I have a question. You spent a large portion of the end of the class speaking about blasphemy.
Yes.
And being, I guess, sort of pragmatically minded. And I just wondered, can we get a functional definition of what blasphemy actually is?
Oh, what's blasphemy? That's the question. We need to understand what it is to blaspheme a devotee. Yeah, that's a great question, and I'm going to turn it over to the realization of Vaishnava Das. What realization do you have, Vaishnava? What does it mean to blaspheme the devotees? Does it mean only, okay. What does it mean?
I don't know.
Thanks for bringing it up. It's a good question, Jagannath.
I have one experience. There were a group of devotees who I was going to drop to a railway station, and so we went inside the train, and there were people sitting inside the two benches, and they were not willing to give space to devotees because they were wearing saffron. So I sort of got angry and said, "You should shift right now because you need to give people space." So the devotees sat, and then when they went back, they really appreciated what I had done, because I came to know about that later. So I thought maybe even protecting devotees from any outsider is a part of protecting them from blasphemy.
That's true. Thank you, Shruti Sargar.
One way of checking if it is blasphemy or not is we can see our own mood that. Are we, like, if there is a mood that we are really trying to maybe, like, see and discriminate and intelligently help someone, then hopefully it is not blasphemy. Otherwise, if it is, like, very impulsive, or it is, like, just making us restless, or also our ego is chewing on the thing again and again that this happened, most probably it is, like, our false ego, and it tends to be more towards blasphemy.
I think that's the essence right there. We could go on, and there's more things to be said. The essence is there. What's the mood? Just like you could say, shut the door, please. Or you could say, shut the door. I told you a million times to shut the door, you jerk. You know what I mean? It's the same... The same message is there, but how is it, what's the intention? So what's the mood of the heart? I think that's very important, because again, Prabhupada also stresses not blind following, you know, but he also stresses, so it's this we could talk about a lot. Too bad you didn't bring it up. That was a really good question. What does it mean to blaspheme? The mood is very important. Oftentimes the mood is belittling, putting somebody down so that I can be up. Oftentimes that's the mood. That's very dangerous. And yet it's so common. It's so difficult to develop that proper attitude. It's so common that we're putting somebody down so that we can be up. So that the mood. Kalakanta Prabhu, you came in just in time. Would you like to? We didn't say the prayer. We're going to say the prayer. But we want you to give us a summary of explanation of what is the definition of blasphemy.
Can I do it right after the prayer?